This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. It's estimated that 78% of Michigan residents believe there are legal protections barring discrimination against lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. Actually, that's not true. The Michigan Elliott Larson civil rights law does not protect them. You can be fired for being gay. You could be denied housing. Hotels and restaurants can refuse patrons they think might be gay or lesbian. Those who are against granting LGBT people legal protections are worried that passing non-discrimination laws might lead to accepting marriage for lesbian and gays. Where state Supreme Courts have overturned laws that banned gay marriage, they cited their own civil protection laws protecting the rights of LGBT people. Gary Glenn is with the group American Family Association Michigan. He's also co-author of the Michigan Constitutional Amendment defining marriage as between one man and one woman and banning recognition of similar unions among same-sex couples.
So these sexual orientation policies themselves have been proven to be a threat to the institution of marriage, as cited by three state Supreme Court decisions across the country, and they threaten to penalize and discriminate against both individuals and businesses and churches and community groups like Catholic Charities, Boy Scouts, and Salvation Army simply because they don't advocate for the homosexual lifestyle.
But at the end of this month, the U.S. Supreme Court will be looking at two cases that might decide many of the issues of discrimination against LGBT people. Joining us now is Jay Kaplan with the American Civil Liberties Union. Jay, let's start with these two cases. First, the Supreme Court will be looking at California's Proposition 8. What's that about?
Yes, that's about a ballot initiative that was passed by voters in 2008, which actually took away the right of same-sex couples to get married. There was a six-month period in California where same-sex couples could get married as a result of a state Supreme Court decision. And then as a result of this voter referendum, that right was taken away.
And that's one of these cases that Gary Glenn is talking about where the state Supreme Court came in and said, hey, look, we've got these protections for LGBT people. We say we're not going to discriminate against them, and yet here we are with this proposition that does exactly that.
Well, I don't think that's such a bad thing. And there are ways in terms to find a right to marry, not only in the fact that you have non-discrimination laws, but also in our Constitution. We have an equal protection clause that says that people are to be treated fairly under the law. And any time you deny people a fundamental constitutional right, which, by the way, the United States Supreme Court has said that the right to marry is a fundamental right, it implicates the Constitution. But I would also, you know, in response to what Mr. Glenn said, we have more than 20 states across the country that have civil rights protections for LGBT people against discrimination. And at this point in time, we have 9 states plus the District of Columbia that allow same-sex couples to get married. So, you know, we're seeing a great deal of progress on marriage equality, but passing the civil rights laws don't automatically, at this point in time, bring the right to marriage equality. And if the United States Supreme Court decides that there is a right for same-sex couples to get married, states that don't have civil rights protections, like in Michigan, will have to allow same-sex couples to get married.
Now, the second case is out of New York, and it centers on a woman named Edie Windsor. I know the National ACLU is involved in this case as well. What's that one about?
Yes, that's actually, it is the National ACLU's case. That involves a challenge to the federal law called the Defense of Marriage Act. Section 3 of that law says that even for same-sex couples who legally get married in states that permit that or jurisdictions that permit that, that the federal government will not recognize their marriage for purposes of any benefits or programs. So the situation with Edie Windsor, she and her deceased spouse, Thea Sparrer, were married in Canada. Thea passed away, and Edie inherited her estate. And normally, the federal government for married couples does not charge them with federal estate inheritance taxes. But in Edie's situation, since they would not recognize that marriage, she was forced to pay $350,000 in inheritance taxes. So she is challenging the constitutionality of such a law.
Now, this is not uncommon. There are a lot of gay couples who may have been married someplace else, a state that recognizes it or a country that recognizes it, and yet the federal government does not recognize it for tax purposes. If you put both your names on a house, for example, you'll have to have the taxes reassessed and everything else just as if you had sold it. There are a lot of tax advantages to marriage that lesbian and gay couples cannot take advantage of because their marriage is not recognized.
Absolutely. And in addition to tax considerations, it also impacts Social Security, where legally married couples are allowed to select their spousal share of their spouse if their spouse has been working and would be receiving a larger Social Security benefit for immigration purposes, for federal pensions. All of those things are being deprived. And the irony is here you have people who are legally married, and usually we allow in terms the issue of marriage to be in the purview of states, and yet here the federal government is interfering in terms of that they are treating these legally married couples as strangers in the eyes of federal law and federal policy.
How is it that the U.S. Supreme Court decided to take up these two cases almost together? I mean, two subsequent days.
Well, I think we're seeing tremendous progress made in the area of marriage equality. Just in the last 5 years, we're seeing more states, either through a voter referendum or through the legislature or through court decisions, finding that, you know, deciding that same-sex couples do deserve that same fundamental right to get married. And we're also seeing in the lower federal courts challenges being brought, successful challenges. Certainly the Prop 8 case, you know, a successful challenge to this voter referendum, which took away that fundamental right to marry. And in terms of the Defense of Marriage Act, every federal court has consistently struck down the Defense of Marriage Act, the constitutionality. And so it was a likelihood that it was going to make it to the United States Supreme Court. And I think the court is aware of this progress that's being made on this issue and their need to get involved in this issue and to decide some very crucial things regarding the issue of marriage equality.
Now, I'm going to ask you in a moment to speculate on the many different ways the Supreme Court could view this, but let's start with the makeup of the court. It's a conservative majority. Will that have an impact on a case like this, or the cases
well,
like these?
There's 9 members on the United States Supreme Court. I think we could easily characterize 4 of those justices as being progressive, 4 of these justices being reliably conservative, and Justice Kennedy, Anthony Kennedy, who in the past has written, actually authored the favorable decisions on behalf of LGBT people in the case of Romer versus Evans and Lawrence versus Texas. So the thought is he might be the deciding factor in this issue. He is normally reliably conservative on many other issues.
Now, your attorneys know what those cases are. Could you tell me what those two cases are?
Absolutely. The Romer versus Evans was a 1996 decision which held unconstitutional a law in Colorado that said Colorado can never pass any laws that would protect gay people against discrimination. And Lawrence versus Texas was a 2003 decision where Texas criminalized same-sex sodomy, did not criminalize opposite-sex sodomy. These laws, these same-sex sodomy laws, frequently were used by states to justify discrimination against gay people. And it was struck down as unconstitutional and a violation of people's privacy.
Let's start with California Prop 8 again. How might the court view this case?
The court could view it in several ways. They could, first of all, there might be an issue of standing, whether or not the people who are defending Prop 8 have standing to bring this case. And that's an important issue because the state of California refused to defend Prop 8. And if they decide they don't have standing, then the lower court decision would hold, and then Californians would have, same-sex couples would have the right to get married. They could decide it narrowly, like the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which was the second level of federal courts, where they looked at the unique circumstances of California, where you had this right to marry, and it was taken away, and they could strike that down as unconstitutional. And then once again, same-sex couples in California would have the right to marry. They could decide it the way the Obama administration is encouraging the court to do. They could say, let's look at states that provide some of the same rights of a state marriage, but won't allow people to get married. And there's about 8 states. And then, as a result, there would be 8 more states that permit marriage equality. Or they could decide to make this an issue about marriage equality in general. And they could either hold that states have a right to deny gay couples the right to get married, to pass initiatives, or they could hold that state constitutional amendments that deny the right to marry are unconstitutional. And in that circumstance, that would have an impact on all states, including Michigan.
Now, we saw something interesting happen last week where a lesbian couple who each have adopted kids wanted to be able to make sure that the kids' future was more secure, and they each had parental rights. That was taken to a federal court. The federal judge decided last week, you know, I'm not going to decide on this until the U.S. Supreme Court makes some kind of statement. Were you surprised by that?
I wasn't surprised, and I understand where the judge is coming from, because what the Supreme Court will be deciding is not only these issues of marriage equality, but also, and this is kind of legal technical terms, but the level of scrutiny, constitutional scrutiny, that is applied to discriminatory actions or policies against gay people. In the past, courts have applied the lowest level of scrutiny. In other words, a level of scrutiny that is very deferential to the states and to government, what's called a rational basis. However, in these cases, what the Obama administration, in their legal briefs that they have filed, are urging is a higher level of constitutional scrutiny. In other words, makes it harder for a state to justify when you deny a right to LGBT people. And that's a very important thing that the court's going to decide, because it might make some of these marriage prohibitions less likely to withstand a constitutional challenge. So I can clearly understand, since the plaintiffs have brought a marriage equality claim, they amended their complaint to challenge Michigan's constitutional amendment, why the judge would prefer to wait for some constitutional guidance from the court.
And finally, the E.D. Windsor case, the case out of New York, what are the different ways the Supreme Court could look at that?
Well, there's also going to be an issue of standing, too, because the federal government is refusing to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. So who is defending it? There's a House committee for the Republican Majority Party hired outside counsel. So they have to decide that issue. Did they have standing to appeal this decision? And if not, the lower court decision would stand, and it would strike down the Defense of Marriage Act for the First Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers some East Coast states. But it wouldn't render a decision, you know, final decision on the Defense of Marriage Act. Or they could decide there is standing and decide the constitutionality of DOMA, and they could strike that down. And I personally think there's probably a good likelihood that the court is ready to render the Defense of Marriage Act, that section, unconstitutional.
All right. Jay Kaplan is with the American Civil Liberties Union. Thanks for talking with us.
Thanks so much, Lester.